sensational.
New hero, Quiver.
Wing, Quack.
Hey, I was watching that.
You watch too much TV.
So, Hawkman, how do you like being a sidekick?
To tell you the truth, I'd rather not be one at all. But if I didn't do it, Gosling would kill me.
Greetings. Welcome to another exciting episode of Pretentious Internet Theater, the show that's so leet it made Ben Collins cry. I am your host, Andrew Cook. Before we get started with tonight's story, which is the sequel to the first ever Batman Darkwing Duck crossover featured on fanfiction.net, or perhaps on the internet itself, I would like to let you elitists know that this show is now available on iTunes and has its own following as a fan page on Facebook. Yes, by leaps and bounds this show's coming. And of course, you can always email us at thepitpodcast@gmail.com. So I'd like to get started with a quote, as I always do. This one by Albert Einstein. It says, "You have to learn the rules of the game, and then you have to play better than anyone else. You know the rules, and so do I. Let's get on with our story." Pretentious Internet Theater proudly presents On Dark Wings and Dark Knights, Book 2, by Damian Nathaniel Wren. Author's note: the story picks up where the original On Dark Wings and Dark Knights crossover leaves off. If you haven't read it, you may want to start there before continuing, even if only to see why Batman ends up wearing a tutu. Have fun! Chapter 1, Adulteration. Dear Diary, it's been 7 years since Darkwing Duck, took on his first big case. 7 years since he rescued me from Taurus Bulba. 7 years since I started to call the house at 537 Avian Way home. St. Canard has changed. The crime rate has dropped considerably. Supervillains, the likes of Negaduck and the Steaminator, no longer prowl its streets. And foul seems but a memory. There's still a place for those like Darkwing. Neighboring Duckbird still has its fair share of problems, and Gizmo Duck can't be everywhere. But mostly, it's about the use of superior methodologies in solving the more difficult crimes, and bringing in the more stubborn perpetrators. Having retired, Darkwing Duck is no longer St. Canard's defender. Quiverwing is, although Dad won't talk about it. About 5 years after he began his career as Darkwing, something happened. It's almost like he just snapped. He became darker, harsher, more sinister. As Darkwing, he was no longer distracted by his ego. He had a mission. And by God, he completed it. The near death of Negaduck should have told the tale. It was most certainly the beginning of it. The paramedics resuscitated Negaduck 3 times on the way to the hospital. It turns out twice more after he arrived. He spent months in traction. And when Negaduck's trial came 7 months later, he was still being fed through a tube. It did little for his case, though. The jury quickly reached a guilty verdict on all counts, and Negaduck was sentenced to so many years his great-great-grandchildren will grow and die in max security. Not long after Negaduck's incarceration, Liquidator fell. Having trapped him in a giant, water-sealed glass tank, Darkwing turned on a series of high-powered heat lamps, evaporating him completely. By the time he cooled and recondensed, he was in the hands of the St. Canard PD. I'll never forget the disappointed look on his face as I asked him how he knew Liquidator would be able to put himself back together again. He scowled and mounted the rat catcher, drove away. To this day, I still don't know for sure. The rest fell too. He lured Megavolt into St. Canard Power and Light, let him drain the whole city, and dunked him in water. Already mentally unstable, Megavolt endured severe brain damage from the shock. His catatonic, vegetating body was ruled incapable of standing trial and committed to the local asylum under special guard. The Steaminator was his next target. Darkwing took him personally. The battle between him and former Taurus Bulba was dramatic, destructive. Darkwing used what he referred to as equalizer charges, something he said he learned about from watching footage of the Bat, as he battled Quackerjack's insane little toy during the incident at St. Canard's Stereo and Speaker. Developed by Gyro Gearless on special request, the miniature-shaped charges worn on the fist like brass knuckles ripped through the cyborg's metal body like tinfoil, eventually leaving mangled and twisted Steaminator parts all over the battlefield. There was enough left to stand trial, but hardly. But barely. It was the brutality of the encounter with Steaminator that left St. Canard, nay, the entire country reeling in shock and terror. Footage of the smoking, charred, and broken husks that used to serve as the cyborg's legs were transmitted all over the country, while Duck Space Video temporarily carried partial footage of the battle, Darkwing straddling the grounded and legless Bulba as he beat the cyborg in the head, his final two explosive charges going off during the attack. After that, Darkwing was branded as serious a threat as those he fought against. He became public enemy number one. The government placed a $1 million bounty on his head, and every law enforcement agency in the country was set on the lookout. Even Shush summarily expelled him from the organization and promised him that if he ever donned hat and cape as Darkwing again, they would hunt him from the very ends of the earth. So Darkwing disappeared. I don't blame him. I don't blame them either, though. After seeing what happened, the remaining agents of Fowl disappeared, fearing Darkwing's vengeance may fall on their heads as well. Sight! Taurus' cybernetic body chopped up and charbroiled like steak cutlets. Some domesticated steer at a butcher left no one wanting to face Darkwing as judge, jury, and executioner. Dad's never been the same since either. He still loves me, and Morgana. He's tender and affectionate, and an excellent dad. But something's lost. Some certain spark. When the police needed help some time back, and I reprised my childhood identity as the Quivering Quack, I think I saw it awake a little. I expected him to object, as he always does. He just looked at me, his eyes tired. Maybe promised to bring his little girl back in one piece. Honker has become part of his own story. As an inventor, he's top-notch and provides Quiverwing with everything she needs in her own fight against crime. He's also become the unofficial head of a large corporation, one that put Wiffle Boy in its place and came out shining. The end of our encounter with the Bat, the Clown, Honker found a card the Clown dropped. He took it home and examined it, and, as near as I can figure, learned how to use it to control electronics by reading signals from the brain through the skin. He developed a video game using it and was an overnight success, millions pouring into his trust account practically overnight. Sales were through the roof, and Wiffle Boy became virtually unheard of. Honker's corporation was king. As a gift, he applied the technology to a carefully designed guidance system for my arrows. Every arrow I fire responds to my mental commands, allowing me to make small corrections as I need to in flight. Needless to say, my aim was already deadly. Now I can't miss. As for Launchpad, he's Dad's best friend. They often spend time talking about old times. It reminds me of how rambunctious I was. Fishing trips, hanging out, whatever. When Launchpad's not flying Mr. McDuck off to exotic location, he's here, keeping Dad's spirit up. He even still calls Dad DW. In fact, it was he and Honker that worked together to build the Firefly, my motorcycle. Super fast, highly maneuverable, and exceedingly quiet, uses some kind of alternate thrust engine. I don't understand how it works, of course. It caused the tail end of the motorcycle to glow brightly like the tail of a Firefly, which is how the bike got its name. It has one of Honker's cybernetic control rigs, too, allowing me to pilot it hands-free while firing off arrows, or even as a remote control to bring it to my location. It takes concentration to do it, but I get better at it every time I practice, and I practice every day. You must be Madoka, Herbert Muddlefoot III at your service. Honker bowed gracefully as he took the hand of the new Japanese exchange student. Beautiful Ryuku Flying Fox gave it a gentle kiss. Looking her again in the eye, he smiled gently. But you can call me Bonkers, a resounding whap, as Tank smacked Honker in the back of the head, Honker stumbling forward from the blow. Here, Tank takes a jock strap and hangs it over Honker's nose, stretching to his limit and letting it snap back into Honker's bill, knocking him down, before dumping a smelly stack of overworn gym clothes on him. Make sure you get these in the laundry when you get home. Tank looked down at his younger brother, who was adjusting his glasses. He again rose to his feet. Pathetic, he mumbled, and turned his attention to his new transfer. And who, my lovely, might you be? She giggled and replied softly, her accent gently seasoning her words. Madoka. Tank smiled a smile he'd practiced oh so many times to oh so many women. A smile he knew never failed to make women feel like they were the first to see it. He could almost see the mischievous spark in his eyes. How would you like a real man to show you around? Madoka smiled big as her cheeks grew red. I would like that very much. Hey, Honker. Got you doing laundry? Honker looked up from his task to see Goslin leaning against the door frame with her backpack over one shoulder and skateboard in hand. Yeah. Tank asked me to... Tank! Goslin interrupted. Tell me you're kidding! Honker hung his head. Sometimes, Honker, I really don't get you. You could stand up to the greatest evil Saint Canard has ever known, and yet Tank still has you grasped firmly by the cojones. Hasn't working with Darkwing taught you anything? But, Goslin, it's beyond time, Honker. You need to stand up to your brother. If you don't do it now, you're never going to earn his respect. It's not just Tank. With him as the quarterback, nearly the entire football team is dialed in on that kick-me sign on your back. To make things worse, Bo String and his crew are all over you when the football team isn't. Honker sighed. It seemed a lot easier than it is, Goslin. If you can fight Negaduck, you can stand up to Tank and Bo. Goslin sighed, her demeanor softening quickly as she propped her skateboard against the door. She approached Honker. She smiled gently, hugging him. Honker was stiff as his pulse began to quicken. She felt the heat on his cheeks. You've been my best friend for more than 7 years, Honker. I'd hate to just watch you go through this. Promise me you'll do what you can. Honker looked Goslin in the eye for the first time. Goslin, sensing the hidden note of panic, swirling in the tiny pools of confusion. She giggled in an attempt to relax him a little. Believe me, it won't nearly be as scary as you imagine. Goslin picked up her skateboard and walked out of the laundry room without breaking her stride, Honker watching the gentle swing of her hips as she made her exit, closing the lid on Tank's laundry, Honker sighed. Sure, he had accomplished a lot fighting the forces of evil, but she and Darkwing were always there. He knew he had nothing to worry about. This, though, this was different. The only way he could face Tank and Bo was alone, and that terrified him. Tank was twice his size, if not bigger, and had no compunction against giving him a good brotherly beatdown. And Bo, well, like father, like son is all he could say. Besides, it wasn't Tank's respect he really wanted, Bo's either. It was Goslin's. But unfortunately these days, even that was going to come at a price, and Honker just had no idea how he was going to pay it. Honker set the washer for an extra large load and started on its longest cycle, leaning his back to let out another sigh. Just give it up, he told himself. It's never going to happen. Not... Honker interrupted himself. Not unless I... Honker smiled as he put away the detergent. Not unless... Chapter 2. Rivalry. Hey, Goslin. You heading out tonight's game? Lizzie looked upward at Goslin expectantly, her green eyes wide as she clutched her books tightly to her chest. Goslin removed her helmet from her hard bag and placed it under her shoulder before replying, Of course. Smiling broadly, she gave a gracious bow. Transportation and admission provide courtesy of one Deuteronomy duck. Liz's eyes almost impossibly opened wider as she squealed with excitement, Goslin locking the case. As in Deuter... I mean, the Splashing Pumpkins Deuter? Lizzie swooned. Oh my God, Goslin, you're kidding, right? Goslin shook her head. I had my dress picked out and everything. Lizzie let out a contented sigh. Can you imagine? Lizzie clutched her books tighter and cast her eyes dreamingly skyward. Classic matchup between two sworn enemies, the St. Canard Cannonballs versus Duckburg's High Marauding Mallards, and all while sharing popcorn and soda with, well, him! Lizzie let out another squeal as if to punctuate. Gosling smiled, zipping her black, mandarin-collared leather riding jacket as she gently shook her head. What am I going to do with you? Gosling threw a leg over her motorcycle and, taking a deep breath, checked the time on his display. Speaking of time, I don't have much left before Mr. Duck shows up. Starting her bike, Gosling turned back to Lizzie, kicked up her stand. See you tonight at the game? Lizzie smiled, anxious for a chance to meet one of her musical idols. Definitely. Putting on her helmet, Gosling checked the parking lot to make sure everything was clear before walking her 1,000cc street bike out of its parking space. Quick check of her engine start with the torque of the throttle, later she was gone. A messenger boy, an apparent duck-chicken hybrid with white feathers and red messenger uniform, approached an unassuming home. Standing tall and proud, he adjusted his glasses and, smiling slightly, reached up and took hold of the Duckburg home door knocker and swung it resolutely. He waited. Yeah, just a sec. A crash could be heard in the house, followed by a series of heavy footsteps before the latch was undone and the door flung wide open. Built like a linebacker, the Beagle's demeanor was harsh. He was definitely looking for a fight. What do you want? I'm sorry, sir. I'm a messenger with the Duckburg Courier Service. I have a priority package for, Mr. Three? Yeah, I'm Three. Give it to me. The messenger's slight smile turned into a wide grin as he lunged at the neck of the unsuspecting Beagle, quickly crushing his throat and tackling him to the ground. Working quickly, he turned Three on his side, reaching into his pocket to produce a pen-like device. Thank you, sir. Now, if you don't mind, I'm just going to need to sign here. Gosling? Gosling blushed at her date's reaction as he admired her in her green dress. From her ears dangled delicate gold chains supporting two beautiful Tahitian pearls, a perfect complement to the equally delicate gold chain around her neck, bearing a gold dolphin charm with a Tahitian pearl at its center. The dress itself was shoulderless, elegant sweetheart neckline chosen to enhance her pert B-cup as the dress hugged her waist, then fanned out to enhance her hips until it ended just above her knees. A simple gold tennis bracelet and a pair of strappy gold heels completed the ensemble. You're beautiful. Well, thank you, Deuteronomy. Shall we move on? Oh, he stumbled. Oh, of course. Opening the door to his town car as he watched as Gosling carefully entered, her long red hair flowing freely behind her. He let out an involuntary sigh before joining her in the back seat of the car and closing the door. Ready, Gosling? She nodded. Duckworth? The driver spared a moment to look to the back seat. Welcome back, Miss Mallard, he said, and started the car. To the game, sir. To the game, Duckworth. Right away, then. Tank! The doors of the locker room slammed against the tower walls, and with a resounding thunk, as Three burst into the room, temper flaring. A small entourage of players from Duckburg's marauding valor stepped in behind him. What are you, scared? Tank stood up, still shirtless. A towel was draped over his shoulders, which he held at each end. A smug expression on his face. Terrified, he monotoned. Another player from the St. Canard Cannibals chirped in. You freaking M&Ms. Tank looked towards his teammate and left. Oh, yeah. Melt in your mouth, not in your hand. He turned to Three. You know what that's like, right? Three lunged at Tank, only to be slammed back one-handedly by the coach of the St. Canard Cannibals. Save for the field, Three, and get out of my locker room. Tank smiled. Three threw the coach a defiant look and turned back to Tank. Don't think this is over, Tankid. I'll rip apart your entire offensive line if I have to. The coach intervened, more forceful this time. On the field, gentlemen. Three turned to the coach, still defiant. Yeah, I was just leaving anyways. He took a moment to glare at Tank before moving on. Come on, Mallards, let's leave these retards alone. We got a game to win. The bright lights, the cheering, the live music. Gosling marveled a bit as she took it all in. It wasn't her first school football game, or even her first time watching the time-tested rivalry of St. Canard and Duckburg duke it out. It was something that, every time she watched, she was amazed to see. Though something about it was still exciting. Popcorn? Gosling looked at her date, only barely disguised in his black jeans and splashing pumpkins tea, beneath a pair of round, wire-rimmed glasses and a black baseball cap. "Popcorn?" he asked again, thrusting the bag at her. "Sure," she giggled, and accepted the bag before demurely consuming a single kernel. She honestly could only barely believe he was getting away with... "Squee!" Goslin winced before looking in the direction of the offending squeal. Much overexcited Lizzie had Goslin squarely in her sights. He was approaching fast. "Oh my god, oh my god, oh my god, oh my god!" Goslin reached out quickly and snatched shut Lizzie's beak and spoke in a coarse whisper. "Quiet! Can't let anyone know he's here." "Oh yeah," Lizzie mumbled, her beak still clasped shut. Goslin released her, and she took a deep breath before continuing to whisper herself. "Where is he?" "Closer than you think. Come on, we can still get inside. I'll introduce you in the library. No one should be there. You have to be quiet, okay?" Lizzie smiled, offering up her pinky for a swear. "Promise." "I'm gonna make you squeal like a pig, Can-Can." "I am a pig, freaking M&M." "Oh, sorry." The St. Canard Cannibals and the Duckbird Mourning Mallards lined up at the 30-yard line. Prepared for the next play, it was third down with eight to go. The Cannibals had the ball. Tank took his place and made the calls. "Down! Callista! 22! Huh!" Three leapt from his position, vaulting over the back of his teammate and slamming into Tank in the air. The two immediately went to the ground, the impact sanding Tank's helmet flying. The line of scrimmage immediately burst into action in response, the two teams erupting into a gladiatorial melee as the cheerleaders quickly made for the stand. The crowd began chanting, "Fight! Fight! Fight! Fight!" Goslin turned to her companion, who had joined in on the chant. "Dewey?" She tapped his shoulder to distract him. "Dewey!" Deuteronomy turned and faced Goslin, his demeanor quickly turning to calm. "Do you need something? I'd be happy to." "No, Dewey, I just need to go powder my beak. I'll be back." "Oh, okay," he answered, and returned his attention to the action. The remainder of the teams had joined in from the benches at this point, and Three's brothers had joined him from the stands. "This is going to be good," he said. And as the crowds cheered for their favorite team, referees and admins stood at a loss. "This is for humiliating me, you piece of dreck. Madoka should have been mine." One and Two held Tank to the ground as tears began to flow from Three's eyes. "What gives you the right?" Tank looked up, barely able to see through his badly swollen eyes. Blood was pouring out from cuts in his eyebrows and trickled from his left ear. Through his good ear, he heard One and Two laughing. Three beat him. Then he felt a hand around his throat as the world began to fade. Pop, snap, pop. Arrows flew into the field, those shafts exploding into tiny, quickly exploding particles. "It's hot," one of the boys exclaimed, forgetting his fight as he ran, rolling across the field. One by one, the boys from both teams stopped fighting and started scratching, rolling, and dousing themselves in water as Quiverwing continued her less-than-lethal assault. One, Two, and Three among them. Tank was the only one to remain on the field, bloodied, broken, and motionless. Quiverwing was the first to decide, checking his pulse. She tapped the button on her earpiece. 911, she paused. "This is Quiverwing. We're going to need an ambulance on the football field at St. Canard High Stat. Got some serious head and neck injuries, along with cuts, lacerations, and major bruising. Decent amount of blood loss, too. The subject's breathing, and pulse are erratic. But he's already lost consciousness. I'm transferring you to Principal Evans now. He's on his way." Quiverwing stood up and turned to the principal. "Take care of him, Mr. Evans," she said and ran off. Suddenly, she turned backwards. "And don't forget to answer your phone," she yelled, his phone going off immediately after. By the time Mr. Evans thought to ask how she knew, she was gone. Goslin checked the stands, but Dewey had already gone along with the rest of the crowd. They must have been sent home after the incident. She met up with him at the exit to the parking lot. "You missed it," he chimed enthusiastically. "Right after you left, Quiverwing came in and broke up the fight. You should have seen her." Goslin shook her head and shrugged. Gotta go, right? Just wasn't meant to be, I guess." Goslin looked thoughtful for a moment, then smiled softly, pressing her shoulder against Dewey as she looked up at him, fluttering her emerald green eyes. "Would you mind stopping for a milkshake before taking me home?" Dewey smiled as Duckworth pulled up to the curb and opened the town car door. "Not a bit. Not meaning to be a romantic, but do you mind if we get two milkshakes instead of one?" Goslin laughed, remembering Dewey's uncle. "I wouldn't have it any other way." Chapter 3. Remorse. "Binky said I'd find you here." Honker, alone in the little-known water room at St. Canard Falls, diverted his attention to the door. Goslin stood there peering from behind a curtain of falling water and smiling brightly. Honker smiled weakly in return. "Hey, Goslin." Goslin walked in through the doorway, an intentionally designed part of the rushing falls that comprised three walls of the room. The rear wall of the water room was a specially designed waterfall, which cascaded over various large gears and broken clockworks arranged into abstract patterns until falling into a large reflecting pool. Honker himself was in the seating area, a series of rocks cut so they'd have flat tops spaced neatly but irregularly atop granite floors. A strategic mix of red, blue, and green tungsten lights worked hand-in-hand in the room with ultraviolet lamps, highlighting an array of impurities in the stones and accenting the otherwise dull materials. Goslin had never been here before. She was carefully taking it all in as she entered. "I heard you're taking the tank situation pretty hard." Honker shifted uncomfortably in his seat. "Yeah. It's difficult." "Feh," Goslin mocked. "It's what happens when rivalries get taken too seriously." Goslin took a moment, placing her pack carefully on the ground as she sat, sharing a stone with Honker. Honker, sensing her warmth, the softness of her feathers, felt his pulse pick up a bit. His mind spun. As Goslin continued speaking to him as he closed his eyes, took a deep breath, inhaling her scent. He was not going to let panic set in. Coach Bison reported an incident in the locker room before the game. Tank took the whole M&M thing a bit too far. Basically took a shot at Three's manhood. Cut him pretty deep from the sound of it. Even in St. Canard, we all know Three's reputation. Never mind that he's from one of the most notorious crime families to ever grace Duckburg or St. Canard. And this doesn't even cover the fact that he should have known One and Two would join in the fray if anything went south. Three of them are inseparable. Honker cast his eyes downwards. His expression pained. "Yeah, he didn't." Honker sighed. "He didn't think of that, I guess." Honker looked Goslin in the eye, suddenly blurting out, "But he didn't. He..." Goslin interrupted. "He didn't deserve it. We all know that. But his injuries weren't serious. He'll be back in action in no time, and thanks to a little help from Quiverwing, Three and his brothers, for the time being, are enjoying a 30-day siesta in the Hacienda Juvie, all compliments of the state of Calasota." Honker watched as Goslin stood up and stretched. Today was one of the rare days she wore a trademark purple sports jersey, except now it hugged snugly against her form, revealing every delicate curve as it flowed down into a pair of black, straight-legged lowriders. Sturdy pair of black boots, a pair she wore specifically while riding, completed the ensemble. As he admired her, Honker, somehow, felt renewed. "Goslin, I want you to know that I..." He paused. Goslin picked up her pack. "Yes, Honker?" "Thank you. I... Honker's eyes dropped as his resolve broke before flickering back to meet with Goslin's. "I wanted to say thank you." Honker looked around, ensuring no one was there to overhear. "I'm glad Quiverwing was there to help out. Thanks." Goslin smiled a warm smile, hugging Honker tight before walking to the door. She turned back to face him just before leaving. "Take care, Honker," she said, and was gone. Honker looked down at the floor, mumbling enthusiastically, "I'll do that." "Yeah, yep, 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 yep," Drake said back in his seat, stretching his arms above his head. It was dinner time in the Mowat household, and Morgana was manning the kitchen, although Drake didn't agree with everything Morgana put on the menu. Tonight's meal was one of his favorites. "Hi, Dad," Goslin rushed through the front door, taking a quick detour to kiss her father hello before rushing off. "I'll wash up and be right back." Drake smiled. "That's my girl!" Morgana placed an empty plate in front of Drake as she began setting the table, the other two plates clunking softly against the clothed dining table surface as she spoke. "You know, she reminds me of someone else, more and more every day." Drake sighed. "I know, I know. I just wish there were some things she didn't emulate." "Like Quiverwing?" Drake's eyes rolled as he recoiled from the thought and shifted directly to Morgana. "Exactly. You knew that her following in your footsteps would be inevitable from the day she first dressed up as the Crimson Quackette." Morgana couldn't help but smile. She was so cute in her little Darkwing outfit. Drake took in a breath and let out a resigned sigh. "I know, I know. There wasn't anything I could do, was there?" Morgana smiled. "You provided an excellent example for her to follow, and got her to wait until she was old enough to start taking on these challenges on her own." "Feh!" Morgana looked at Drake. "Excellent example, my..." He interrupted himself. "I was not an excellent example. For one thing, I nearly..." Morgana interrupted him. her voice stern. You created a much safer St. Canard for your little girl to play hero in is what you did. It doesn't matter how. Not anymore. All that matters is that you succeeded. Drake shrugged. I guess. Morgana had rounded the table now, kissing Drake on the head. You really are a wonderful father. Now, Goslin will be back any second. Do try to smile for her. Drake chuckled at her comment. Smile automatic. Goslin rounded the corner almost immediately after. Hey, Morgana, sorry I'm a little late. I didn't even notice. Now have a seat, I'll be serving dinner shortly. Yes, ma'am. Morgana? Yes, Goslin. Morgana and Goslin were taking time from evening walk at the local park, something Morgana had suggested. Drake and Launchpad had left almost an hour ago for the tower, and also at her suggestion. Intuition said Goslin needed some girl time and figured this was the best way. I'm worried about Honker. You care about him a lot, don't you? Well, yeah, he's been my best friend since I was 9. Morgana looked down at Goslin, gently shaking her head. That's not what I meant. Goslin felt her cheeks flush. Oh, I'm sure Dewey's a nice guy, but I'm sure you know he's not the one. So the question is, what's really stopping you? Well, Honker's kind of timid. I mean, he's just too nice. You mean he's a wuss? Goslin sunk her head between her shoulders and mumbled her reply. Well, sort of. Morgana remained gentle. You know that's not true, Goslin. You've seen him in action. We all have. When the chips are down, you can always depend on Honker to come through. Whatever it is he's facing, then why can't he just... I don't know, ask me out. He wants you to be happy, even if it's without him. Maybe he believes you wouldn't really be interested. You are friends, after all. Maybe he's just not that good with girls. How many women have you seen him asking out? Goslin thought for a moment. Well, none, but I hate to say it, but practice makes perfect, especially when it comes to asking a girl out. The smoother and more confident the guy is, the more he's practiced. Let's face it, Honker's just not practicing. Goslin sighed. I guess he's not. Morgana smiled. Need 3 guesses why, or will the first be enough? Goslin looked at Morgana, half smiling, half grimacing from the truth. She knew the way he looks at her all too well, after all. And not just anybody could stand tall against the agents of Foul like Honker did, much less run their own corporation. I still wish he'd at least stand up to Tank. Morgana smiled. Keep encouraging him, he'll get there. Meanwhile, at least think about talking to him. The guy doesn't always have to make the first move, you know. Morgana giggled, attempting to change the mood a bit. Besides, he's got 10 times more money than Dewey does any day. Goslin rolled her eyes as she leaned towards Morgana, giving her a gentle shove with her shoulder. Morgana? I know, Morgana smiled. So have you heard about Uncle Nero's fiddle?
Chapter 4. Respect. 1 week. That's how long it passed since Tank had been admitted to the hospital for his injuries. The length of time it took for the doctors to release him and allow him to come home. Bandages wrapped his head, covering the damaged ear, and one of his arms was temporarily immobilized to help his shoulder heal. The swelling that had contorted his face was mostly gone. It would be another week before he attended school again. Tank smiled, presenting his fist. Hey, Bonkers. Honker looked tentatively at the fist as he approached Tank, then made a fist himself and tapped it against Tank's. How's it going, big bro? You know, Bonkers, I was thinking. Tank adjusted himself in the bed, sat up a little higher. He took a deep breath, pausing, as if dramatically or to make a point, before continuing. I mean, it was something about 3. What do you mean? I don't know. It was something about the way he moved, what he said. What I think he said, anyways. Honestly? Tank smiled, chuckling under his breath. I'm pretty convinced now 3 and I should exchange names. Honker smiled, chuckling himself. But that's not what I'm talking about. I had a lot of time to think laying in the hospital. I relived the fight more times than I can count, and I don't know. I just keep thinking of you for some reason. Somehow, I kept seeing you up there instead of 3. Like I said, something about the way he moved, maybe... I'm not sure. Honker held his breath as Tank reached over to his nightstand and poured himself a drink of water. He looked to Honker. I have an extra glass if you want a drink. No, Honker shook his head. I'm fine. Tank nodded. I guess what I'm saying is, I'm sorry. Hunker started. His eyes grew large as he stared at Tank in disbelief. Tank laughed. You can pick your chin up off the floor now, he paused. You know, Madoka did bring you up while I was showing her around the school. Should probably talk to her. Honker looked at Tank suspiciously. You made a fool of me. That was mainly for your benefit. Madoka thought you were cute. Tank shrugged as he took a sip of water, a smirk on his face. Women, go figure, right? Tank took another drink. Here, I had Mom pick this up for you on the way home from the hospital. Tank reached into the drawer of his nightstand and produced a book which he tossed to Honker. Weightlifting. Self-taught. It's the book I got started with a few years ago. Give it a few weeks. See what you think. Not now, Gearloose. I'm a little busy. Oof! Quiverwing grimaced from the pain of impact. Having fallen 1.5 stories to a not-so-soft landing on reinforced concrete blocks. This isn't going according to plan, Quiverwing sung as she rose. Being slammed through a plate glass window was never what she considered fun, and this was the second one she'd been through tonight. Gyro broke in on her calm.
When do you think we'll have a moment?
Quivering watched, eyes wide, as the alligator flew through the window after her, descending upon her in a complete rage.
Quivering, I'm gonna suck the marrow from your bones!
Where are these freaks coming from? Quivering quipped, rolling to one side. She quickly knocked an arrow as she rose to her feet.
What freaks?
Replied Gyro. Not now, she said, and leveled her arrow at her assailant. I think it's time you calm down, whoever you are. Besides, you have really bad breath. I swear, if I have to smell it one more time, I'll puke.
Bad breath?
She heard Gyro breathing off Mike.
How can you smell my breath?
Quivering rolled her eyes. The gator took an offensive stance, charging as he let out a deafening roar. Taking a deep breath, Quivering closed her eyes and let go of the arrow as she exhaled. The concussive arrowhead exploded on impact, knocking the gator back several feet and on his arse. Rolling to one side, he grabbed at the impact point, grunting painfully. Quivering rushed up to him, grabbing his hands and cuffing them behind his back before he could think to recover. She repeated the process, using a plastic tie for the ankles. You want to get this checked out. Arrow likely broke a few ribs.
Ribs?
Quivering sighed. Never mind, Gearloose. What you got?
I have some information that came from 3D Lousing a few hours ago. Seems they found a computer chip of some sort embedded in his neck, hidden under his fur. He passed out when they removed it, so they don't have any answers. But I have managed a preliminary analysis.
Quiverwing headed towards the Firefly, sirens sounding in the distance as she continued the call. Preliminary analysis which returned?
Oh, a preliminary analysis revealed a circuit on the chip similar in the ways to the cybernetic interface device designed by Herbert Muddlefoot. There are some very important differences, though.
Differences? Quiverwing asked. Undaunted, Gyro continued.
Have there been any thefts in Muddletech lately?
Not that I know of, but Honker's resides all over the place, readily available in any toy store. Anyone could have duplicated or altered his work.
Honker?
Quiverwing slammed her palm to her forehead. Herbert, I meant Herbert.
Well, the design is readily available. Gyro paused as if in thought. I'll keep working. I just want to make sure you and Gizmo Duck were aware of the situation, and that Three might not have been acting of his own recognizance.
Quiverwing threw a leg over the Firefly and kicked up the stand, her own Sid delivering a pleasant, warm sensation in the back of her neck as it issued an engine start command to the motorcycle's computer. A whisper quiet rush of ionized air confirmed its success. Keep me advised, she said, and was off. It was midnight, and raining. The hushed sound of Firefly's specialized tire contracting the glistening streets of St. Canard accompanied the quiet whisper of the Firefly's engine as Quiverwing's limbs slowly grew numb from the exposure. The closed encounters with the shop windows that evening had left her with a number of lacerations and enough blood loss to make her sleepy. Quiverwing shook her head. No, she told herself. I have to push. Still 15 minutes away, she was fully across town from the Audubon Bridge and further from home when Gearloose reached her. She hadn't anticipated the battle going into overtime. In fact, she hadn't anticipated the battle at all. It didn't matter, though. However hard she tried, the weather wasn't going to beat her. Her mind was still sharp. She'd get over the blood loss. Her wounds had mostly closed, and her dad taught her the secret. the ability to work through pain. She stayed focused. She stayed focused on the ramifications of what Gear Loose was telling her. Three was a force to be reckoned with, and to get that chip on his neck meant working up close and personal. Tagging Three like that must have taken some real cojones. She didn't want to imagine who might be next on the list. Yeah, go Bonkers! A ring of sophomores, juniors, and seniors surrounded Bo as he flung himself headlong on his opponent, delivering a series of devastating punches. Punches that never seemed to connect. Honker stood there calmly as he watched Bo's mounting frustration, and smiled. Bo came in for another attack, a body blow. Honker waited his time and ducked, stepping to the right and snatching Bo's ankle upwards. Bo landed face first in the dirt. Yay, Honker! Honker turned to Madoka, allowing himself a smile and a bow, before suddenly stepping backwards, avoiding Bo's attempted kick to Honker's bowed head. You freaking show-off! Honker dodged under Bo's widely telegraphed haymaker, jabbing his outstretched thumb and forefinger into Bo's exposed throat before grabbing hold of Bo's shirt and spinning himself under Bo's arm, driving him headfirst into the ground and on his back. Bo began to see red, enraged at Honker's success. Honker was supposed to be the wuss, not him. But as much as he picked on Honker, he never picked a fight with him before. He never figured Honker would actually defend himself. He never figured Honker would actually win. Honker backed away, sensing Bo's enraged state. Having hit his hip wrong during the fall, Bo had a little difficulty standing and winced when on his feet. Probably a strained tendon in his foot or ankle when Honker snatched him down earlier. Bo's eyes were angry and unsettling. Eyes that looked through him rather than at him. Finally, Honker thought, Bo was taking him seriously. Honker reached into his pocket and pulled out a pen-like device. Still carefully watching as Bo prepared an attack, they jockeyed for position. Honker finally catching on to Bo's game. Honker spun and thrusted his palm directly upwards into the snout of a gang member before he was able to hold Honker down for Bo's attack, then stepped forward a safe distance from the crowd. Bo snorted and charged madly, blindly forward as Honker simply stood his ground and waited. At the absolute last moment, Honker leapt upwards, leapfrogging off of Bo's upper back and calmly landing in the circle as Bo drove a tusk into one of the St. Canard cannibals and passed out. Honker walked over and gently shook the unconscious pig with his foot. He looked back at the crowd, now gathered mostly in awe, but a few in horror. Honker decided to belay their concerns. "Don't worry," he said. "Bo will be fine in the morning." Madoka squealed with delight as she ran to Honker's side, kissing him on the cheek before hugging him tight and clutching his right arm, following him as he walked. Honker smiled, enjoying his victory, before laughing. "It does seem I may have broke him, though. Pity." Chapter 5. Constriction. Thirsty. Bo reached for a bottle of water as he and his wheelman pulled up to the corner branch of the St. Canard Bank. It was a small bank, and this branch was smaller still. His throat and mouth were dry, and he feel the sweat in his palms. Worse still, he couldn't figure out why for the life of him he was doing this. The wheelman put his hand to Bo's shoulder. "Come on, man, take it easy. It's all in there. Ain't nothing there but easy pickings." Bo threw him a sharp look. "Remember, we got just under 3 minutes before Quiverwing responds. SCPD will take 4. I get in, hit the teller, get out. You make us a nice easy getaway, 50-50 take once we're clear." Smiling, the wheelman's put his hands back to the wheel. I gotcha. Timer's running now, like my engine. Let's do this." "All right, son, tell me what happened." Three sat in all too familiar interrogation room with two detectives and a uniform. No doubt there were additional officers watching from behind the two-way mirror. Three smiled. "I've been out for over 2 weeks." The uniform chuckled. "We've got that part. What about the football game?" Three's face became quizzical. Puzzled. "Football game? What football game? Don't tell me I missed the game against the Can-Cans." "The game's why you're here, Three. Don't remember a thing, do you?" Three shook his head slowly as the two detectives looked doubtfully at one another. They didn't trust him. It's not like Three ever gave them a reason to. "What's the last thing you remember, Three?" Three's expression strained a little. "It's still kind of hazy, but I remember a knock." "A knock at the door. Go on." "There was a knock at the door, and some messenger waiting when I answered. Said he was carrying a message, or package, for me." "Which was?" "Well, that's just it. He didn't have one. As soon as I said who I was, he jumped me. Next thing I know, I'm in the hospital under police custody." Bo howled in delight as he and his wheelman made it to the outskirts of St. Canard with neither the SCPD or Quiverwing in tow. "Yeah!" He and his wheelman celebrated with a high five. The wheelman rubbed his palms together, anxious as the sun began to slowly dip below the horizon. They reached the drop point and Bo's car without incident. He smiled delightedly. The goodies are coming! The goodies are coming! Bo stared out at the field beside them, his face filled with dread. The hell is that? The wheelman, picked up on Bo's sudden change of demeanor, turned away from Bo to get a quick look. As quick as his head was turned, he heard the sound of a button snapping, followed by metal sliding against the freshly oiled leather. The wheelman's heart nearly stopped as his synapses firing at near inhuman speeds. His eyes grew wide as he began to turn his head back towards Bo, the smell of gun oil whipping his way through his nostrils. Cindy laughed. Now that's one whale of a tale for the grandkids. Wonder what inspired the Calisoda DOT dynamite solution. Who can be sure, Mal replied. I'm just glad I wasn't at the beach during the blast. Amen to that, Cindy said, still laughing. Calming herself, she turned back to the camera, glancing briefly down at her notes before continuing. And in other news this morning, police in both Duckburg and St. Canard remain baffled by an ongoing rash of high-precision robberies plaguing the two cities, each of which appearing to be carried out by a completely different group of people, despite their identical, almost clockwork modus operandi. Cindy looked to her fellow newscaster.
Mal?
Tapping his notes on his desk, the newscaster cleared his voice.
First appearing in St. Canard over a week ago, the motley, ever-changing group of bandits has committed 3 successful bank robberies, and their pattern suggests there's a 4th underway. Though precision timing and expert planning, each of the robberies have been committed both successfully and in record time, meaning the entire team completes his work and disappears before local authorities can respond. During a press conference earlier this morning, a representative for the Duck County Sheriff's Office had this to say.
The scene switched from the newsroom to a park on the edge of St. Canard. Police crews working feverishly to collect the evidence, to clean up the scene. An abandoned car with crimson splatted windows could only barely be seen in the background.
It's obvious that whoever these teams are being recruited and trained by a single mastermind and considered highly expendable. The fact that he, whoever it is, has been able to essentially duplicate the crime using entirely new groups of people at least proves that much. Since the specific individuals involved in each crime continually change, however, the crimes themselves have a tendency of robbing the local forces of suspects and leading them to a very frustrating series of dead ends. We are devoting every possible resource to solving these crimes, including consultant with minds such as Ludwig von Drake and Gyro Gearloose. We have made several fevered attempts at contacting not only Gizmo Duck and Quiverwing, but PK as well. It's a matter of very little time before the mastermind behind these crimes is tracked down and brought to justice.
A brief burst of static echoed on the walls as the TV shut off. Disgruntled Drake Mallard on the other end of the remote control. Morgana looked down at Drake, concerned. You know something. Drake continued staring forward, his forehead wrinkled as he sat deep in thought. I suspect something. You worried about Gosselin? Drake looked up at Morgana, shook his head.
Gosselin's the best of the best. I taught her everything she knows.
Morgana kissed Drake on the forehead. Yes, Dark, but you still haven't taught her everything you know. Gosselin rushed through the room, giving hugs to both Drake and Morgana.
Hey, Dad. Hey, Mom. I'm heading to school now. See you tonight, she said, and was out the door.
Drake looked at Morgana.
Is it me, or did she just call you Mom?
Hey, Gosselin. Honker!
Gosselin opened the garage door to find Honker sitting in wait in a brand new luxury convertible, a roadster with a definite attitude.
Want to go for a ride?
Gosselin looked at Honker. It had been several weeks since they had the chance to speak, and there was no mystery why. He'd increased his muscle size enough to be noticeable, probably from more than a few hours of working out at the gym. And it wasn't the only thing that changed. His manner was much more smooth. He almost literally dripped with confidence and appeal. She liked it. Smiling, Gosselin took a step towards the car, but stopped herself. It would be better if you drove Madoka to school, wouldn't it? Honker laughed her off. Call her a confused girl with whom I'm erroneously linked. Reaching across the roadster, Honker opened the door for Gosselin, repeating his invitation.
Come on, get in!
Gosselin stepped back, unsure.
That's okay. I've got business tonight at the tower immediately after school. See you tomorrow?
Honker shrugged, closing the door.
Yar loss.
Turning to Gosselin now, he winked. We'll catch up, though. Turning the key, Honker started the car, gunning the engine before replacing his seatbelt. A wide grin crossed his face. Gosselin waved.
See ya, Honker!
Honker raised his hand in the parting gesture.
Asta, he replied. Squealed off.
Dad, launch pad, keep it down!
Quiverwing had stepped up to the comm of the Audubon Bay Bridge when she inherited from Darkwing. It didn't stop Drake from Launchpad from hanging out occasionally and causing a ruckus.
Okay, Gearloose, talk to me.
I've completed analysis on the chip I was given. It communicates via local, open Wi-Fi channels, effectively extending its range indefinitely, especially in areas like Duckburg and St. Canard that provide free, city-wide Wi-Fi to their residents.
Noted.
It's ultimately an amplified version of Muddlefoot's design, except with a receiver that sets up some sort of sympathetic vibration with the wearer's nervous system, effectively taking control of them.
So 3 wasn't responsible for what happened that night?
Very likely not, I'm afraid. Although more subtle, there are effects on the person controlling the circuit, too. Remember I said that it set up a sympathetic vibration in the nervous system?
Yeah.
That connection actually goes two ways. Even though it's not intense enough to provide a controlling level of feedback from the wearer, whoever placed the chip on 3 likely has been influenced by 3's personality and thought patterns.
In English,
the person controlling the chip will slowly take on the personalities of whoever is wearing the receiver. The longer they're connected, the stronger the influence.
Quiverwing sighed. Gotcha. Is there any way to shut these chips down without throwing the victims into a coma?
Overload the nervous system, you overload the chip.
Quiverwing smiled. As in stun gun.
As in stun gun.
Gearloose smiled back.
Not the most comfortable solution in the world, but it's near instant recovery.
Gearloose, I could kiss you, Quiverwing said, and hugged the monitor before dropping the call. Launchpad, could you help me out with something? Chapter 6. Resolution. Author's Notes. I've opened a poll on my fanfiction profile asking the readers would be interested in reading additional stories involving Quiverwing, most likely in the format of a weekly serial. Make sure that, if you're interested, you vote yes! The poll will be closing on August 1st, 2010. Oops. Drake sunk into the comfortable leather chair in front of the bank of computers that ran the tower of the Audubon Bay Bridge and kicked up his feet. As Launchpad glanced up from working on the Thunderquack, he gave the very essence of calm, but a torrent of anxiety and emotion boiled below Drake's bravado, and he knew it. Having received his old hat from storage, Drake placed it on his head and tilted it down over his eyes before folding his hands over his chest and waiting. What's the word, LP? She gonna be ready in time?
Yeah, DW. In fact, she's ready to go now. I'm just cleaning her a bit.
Launchpad again turned his attention to his old friend and hero. He didn't know exactly what was on Drake's mind, but he knew it involved Gosselin, and that to him, nothing was more important.
Hey, DW, you need anything while we're waiting?
No, LP, I'll be...
Drake interrupted himself as a soft bell rang, signifying an incoming signal. Drake sprang into action, giving the command to intercept and head to the main monitor. Quiverwing tapped her earpiece. Talk to me. Dewey's familiar voice broke in on the banshee wall of Firefly's tires against brushed concrete.
Quiverwing?
Quiverwing's eyes grew wide, the apparent surprise in her voice.
Deuteronomy Duck of the Splashing Pumpkins?
She closed her eyes, muting the microphone as she regained composure.
How can I help?
Dewey replied, his shock being known apparent.
Don't tell me you're a fan.
Get to it, Dewey.
Oh, Jaro asked me to contact you. Turns out there's a network of those Sith things out there. He showed me how to trace the source and said you could use my help.
Quiverwing breathed a sigh of relief. So what you got for me?
What I don't have is a service location. Not yet. But I have found a number of active clients operating right now at Muddletech.
Quiverwing talked to Throttle. I'm on my way. Quiverwing hit the Firefly, then inspected the site, watching carefully as the Muddletech security patrols covered the front of the building. She noticed a significant problem. Those weren't Muddletech guards.
Quiverwing?
Still out of sight. Quiverwing replied in hushed tones.
What you got, Dewey? I've located the server. You're not going to believe this.
It's in Muddletech.
Dewey was taken aback. Yeah, how did you...
I've already checked the site, and it looks like someone gave the guards the night off. Do you have a specific location for the server?
Not yet, but I have hacked into the security cameras.
Good one. Keep working on finding the server. I'm heading in. Quiverwing whispered softly while hid in the shadows of the Muddletech lobby. The nearest goon to her was rocking ever so slightly to the beat of his music player.
Dewey, you there?
Yeah.
What do you see?
You've got 7 guys, 2 on the either side of your position. The 3 are within 30 feet of you. You should be able to see them. Now. One is stationed behind them and one more at the lobby's south end out of reach. Get this, he's admiring his shotgun.
Time me.
Huh?
Quiverwing leapt from the shadows, forcing the barrel of the shotgun into the wielder's face and rendering him unconscious. Snatching the gun away, she grabbed the barrel backwards and into the stomach of a rushing mook, and spun, using the barrel to knock the prostrated goon on his head. Acting quickly, she locked arms with the goon and rolled to his back, throwing in the oncoming rush of three large dogs before knocking a concussion arrow and firing it into the shoulder of a fourth. Turning quickly, she knocked another arrow, this one with a small triangular tip, as a mook pulled back on the stock of his shotgun. As he took aim, she fired, ramming the arrow up the barrel of the shotgun. He pulled the trigger, causing the gun to blow up in his face. Then she pulled three small single-pointed shuriken from her forearm guard, tossing them behind her, one piercing the shoulder of each of the three dogs she knocked down. They went promptly to sleep. "How'd I do?" Quiverwing asked, Dewey blasting excitedly over her earpiece. "You took out all seven of them in just under 4 seconds." Quiverwing smiled. "I can do better." "Sweet," Dewey celebrated. "I found the server. Is there an elevator nearby? One that's not public access?" Quiverwing looked around, quickly sighting it. "Yeah, looks like it ahead." "Good. I'll see if I can't get the doors open for you," Dewey confirmed. "You want to take the elevator down 3 levels, and that's where you'll locate the server." "And whoever is controlling these mooks," Quiverwing finished into a sprint. A ringing sound followed began echoing through the stone and glass lobby, followed by a deafening clank. Unable to stop in time, Quiverwing slammed into the set of sturdy, wrought iron bars and fell backwards. Quiverwing rubbed her head. A large cage had been dropped on her from above. A series of 8 clanks fired off in rapid succession as the floor beneath her latched onto the bars, and the cage began to lift above ground. Dewey piped in over her earpiece. "Uh-oh, that's not good." Quiverwing sighed as she rolled her eyes. "So said Deuteronomy, master of all that is obvious and mundane." All Quiverwing heard in reply was, "Quiverwing!" She looked down, spotting the alligators she'd fought in not-so-distant past as more Dobermen and Bulldogs rushed into the room. She had no idea the alligator was part of this. Never mind that he was out already. He stepped forward to present himself, bowing graciously.
"Greetings, Cher. Name's Bobo. Glad you could make it to our little ball," the mook snickered. "Now I thought I'd be saying, the day's gonna come when I will be feasting on your bones, but not today, Cher, my employer. He ain't gonna like that much. So be a good share, and in 3 hours we'll be long gone, and the morning crew gonna find you right there, all gift-wrapped and pretty to let you down."
Bobo's demeanor shifted suddenly, much darker.
"But now, I wouldn't try them weapons. There are 4 snipers sitting hidden. Each one I guarantee is a perfectly clear shot to your pretty little head. So you so much as touch an arrow in your quiver and... well, let's just not talk about it."
Bobo turned promptly on his heel, walking towards the elevator.
"Now, les heures de bon temporale!"
The mooks cheered as they assumed their various position around the floor, guarding Quiverwing as the remainder of the crew finished their heist. Quiverwing stood feeling helpless a moment before sitting quietly in the lowest. Quiverwing's head snapped to the source of the sound, an arrow having lodged itself to the floor of her cage. A purple bow was tied to the base of the arrowhead along with a pair of earplugs. Quickly, she put them on, immediately after a skateboard with a box of some sort rolled into the room. One of the mooks walked up to it, kicking it lightly with his foot.
"The heck is that?" Ear-splitting high-decibel klaxons echoed through the marble halls of a series of small gray canisters began rolling into the room and belching copious amounts to familiar purple-tinted smoke. A series of barely-heard thwips sounded as lights were shot out, and in the confusion below, Quiverwing could swear she caught glimpses of an oh-so-familiar hat and cape.
Quiverwing couldn't help but grin.
Smack! Pow! Oomph! A gunshot went off, a muzzle flash again revealing a familiar silhouette in the darkness. "My knee! He shot my friggin' knee!"
One mook complained as Quiverwing's cage tremored. She realized she was being lowered back to the ground. The crunch of bone and snap of sinew accompanied the painful scream of 2 more of the gator's mooks, accompanied by 2 final shotgun blasts and the sound of shattering glass. Bars to Quiverwing's cage raised, the floor already disengaged from a former prison. Smoke was already dissipating. Removing her earplugs, her ears were greeted by an unnerving silence. She looked around to find each of the mooks brought in to guard her in her gilded cage, lying passed out on the floor. Well, all of them except Bobo's tail came out of nowhere, slamming her in the chest and into a nearby pillar. Quiverwing's eyes bulged as she attempted to regain her strength, her body falling listlessly to the ground. Pushing off the ground a little, she coughed, blood spattering the floor as she did so. Dewey, hearing the commotion, broken on her earpiece. "Quiverwing, are you okay?" She looked back at her assailant, charging full speed ahead. He leapt in the air, spinning the smasher once more with his tail. Desperate, she rolled out of the way and knocked another concussion arrow. As Bobo regained his balance, she fired. Bobo looked down at the arrow's impact point,
his crocodilish grin growing wider still.
Now you don't think old Bobo's gonna fall for that again, Cher? Do you?
Bobo tore off his shirt, revealing a quality vest of form-fitting Kevlar armor. Exploding into action, he utilized an almost unnatural speed as he charged Quiverwing's position, body slamming her into a wall. Still unable to catch her breath, Quiverwing grimaced as portions of her rib cage splintered under the force of the blow.
You see, old Bobo, he learns from his mistakes.
Bobo lifted Quiverwing one-handedly, flinging her through a large plate glass fountain near the entrance and continued his monologue.
Quiverwing, not so much, I think.
Bobo moved casually now, taking his time as he savored his upcoming victory over Quiverwing. His employer would be angry, but of no consequence. It had to be done. As long as he got what he came for, he should be happy with it.
Quiverwing? Quiverwing! Dewey broke in again. He's chipped! I can see the modified CID on the security monitor!
Quiverwing remained silent.
Quiverwing!
Bobo stared at the smashed fountain, admiring his work. Series of three broken glass plates set atop a modern industrial sculpture, ruptured, and twisted PVC tendrils belching globules of water across in a scattered array of razor-sharp shards as broken and frayed electronic wiring crisscrossed the damaged areas. He ran his fingers across the top of the tallest plate, flowing crimson ribbons calling to his predatorial nature. Smiling, he took time to take in the scent of Quiverwing's blood as it dripped over the fountain. Placing his thick, stubbly figure into his mouth, he delighted at the taste.
He smiled. Look like old Bobo's gonna be eating good tonight.
Bobo twitched as the electricity suddenly surged through his body. Quiverwing knocking another arrow. Bobo's expression turned hard, merciless. Bobo struggled, affected by the shock but maintaining control.
Don't think this don't do nothing but tickle old Bobo, Cher.
I don't, she said, and fired another arrow into him, increasing the charge. Bobo stumbled forward into the fountain and began yelling in pain as the building lights temporarily dimmed. One of the circuit breakers kicked in, and the lights came on. Bobo remained lying motionless in the fountain except for his heaving chest. Quiverwing turned her attention to the elevator door and took a deep breath.
Dewey?
I'm on it. Focusing her mind away from the pain, she took off running, doors to the elevator opening as she approached. By the way, that shock sent a huge spike through all the network CIDs just before the entire network went quiet. Sysup probably wishes he stayed in bed. Quiverwing dodged to one side of the elevator door just in case before entering. Hitting the threshold, she stopped abruptly.
Honker! No!
Quiverwing knelt down beside Honker as he laid on the floor of the elevator and checked his pulse. Unable to take her eyes off the scorched flesh and feathers surrounding the burnite Sid chip he had implanted. Turning him over, she stared into Honker's peaceful expression, his chest rising and smalling gently as his heart carried on its usual duties. Quiverwing hugged him.
So happy you're all right, she said, and burst into tears, and slapped him. How could you?
Honker awoke, smiling weakly up at Quiverwing as the SCPD finally arrived, promptly locating the two.
I tried to escape. I'm sorry. I didn't want you to know.
Honker reached up, gently wiping a tear from Quiverwing's eye. You look like crap, you know that? Quiverwing, surprised by Honker's comment, chuckled despite her tears. Honker managed another weak smile, sadness in his eyes. I guess this means you won't be able to go to prom together? Quiverwing shook her head as she gently lay Honker down, then stood and composed herself, the SCPD rushing in to apprehend him. No, Honker. I don't think we will be. Fiend. Author's notes. Batman and all related properties, a property of DC Comics. Batman, created by Bob Kane, Darkwing Duck, DuckTales, and all related properties, are the property of the Disney Corporation. Donald Duck, Paper Inc., and PK are also property of Disney Corporation. All here are used without permission. The 1961 report of the Register of Copyrights on the general revision of the U.S. copyright law cites examples of activities that courts have regarded as fair use, among them, use in a parody of some of the content with the work parodied. U.S. Copyright Office, fact sheet on the fair use of copyright works. It's under such authority I proceed.
And thus, our story draws to a close. Yet one has to wonder, will they actually go to prom together? Will there come a time in which they need the Dark Knight to leap from the shadows in St. Canard? And finally, does Quiverwing have an arrow with a boxing glove on the end of it? Because I always thought that was cool. Anyway, until next time, this is Andrew Cook, reminding you that there is much drama on the internet, only the best makes pretentious internet theater. Good night. The pleasure is all yours.
Promised him that if he ever donned cat and hape donned cat, Honker found a car the clown dropped. A perfect compliment to the carefully entered her long red flowing freely. The doors to the locker room slammed with the tiled walls. Sorry. Three turned to the coach, still defiant. "Yeah, I was just leaving anyways." He took a moment to glare at Tank before moving on. "Come on, mallards, let these..." Referees and admins stood at a loss. "This is humiliating. This is humiliating me." 911, she paused. "This is Quiverween." Goslin walked in through the waterway, an intentionally designed part of the rushing falls that Goslin took a moment, placing her pack carefully. "I didn't even notice. Now have a seat. I'll be sinning. Maybe later."
At the absolute last moment, Honker leapt upwards, leapfrogging off of Bo's super back.
Oh, not super back, is it?
Chapter 5. Constriction.
Thirsty. Bo reached for a bottle of water as he and his wheelman pulled to the corner... Despite their identical, almost clockwork, "We are devoting every possible resource to solving these crimes, including consultant with minds." Consultant? Quiverwing hid the firefly, then expected this. Quiverwing hid the firefly.